Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went into the Woods, with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Ben Wright, the original Jack.
Once upon a time,
Ben Wright originated the role of Jack in Into the Woods at the Old Globe in San Diego and recreated it in the original Broadway cast. He also originated the role of Wayne Frake in the Broadway stage adaptation of Rodgers and Hammerstein's State Fair. He also appeared opposite Charlaine Woodard and future Into the Woods co-star Danielle Ferland in George C. Wolfe's Paradise at Playwrights Horizons. More recently, he co-founded Biddy and Bo's Coffee, with 20 locations across 12 states employing over 400 people with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
So, you know, I would say that I learned about Into the Woods. Let me think about this. Ira Weitzman, and I'm sure he's a common name that comes up in New York City when it comes to the theater world. But, you know, I had done a show at Playwrights Horizons when Andre Bishop and Ira were there, called Paradise, the same show that where Danielle and I met each other.
Mm.
And we played brother and sister. And that was a short-lived show, just a limited engagement. But I went back to high school in Indiana, right, which is where I grew up, and get a call from Ira about this show, this Sondheim show that is being done. And of course, my mother, being the theater lover that she was, she's since passed away, but she, you know, all the bells were going off, right? All the good feels were happening. And of course, you know, I wasn't really a theater junkie as a kid. I just kind of grew up doing theater, like from age 7. It was the first time I hit a community theater stage. And I think I lost count after I'd done 25 separate productions of shows, you know, over the years. But anyway, but that's how I learned about it. I recalled and said, hey, you know, we're looking for somebody. And is that story right, though? I get that confused with Paradise, but I'm pretty sure that that's how it happened. And they just remembered me from that and called me up, and I auditioned. And I think Steve and James were in the room on that first audition, if memory serves, because I think I only auditioned one time.
And this was for the production at the Old Globe in San
Diego? Right. That's exactly right.
And did you, unlike with Paradise, did you have a sense with this that this was a sort of pre-Broadway, this could be your big break, you know?
Yeah, I guess I did. You know, the names associated with it, you know, were just unbelievable. So I think that assumption was kind of a given. Oddly for me, you know, I was not fully aware of the rarefied air in which I was being pulled into.
Yeah.
There. And all I could really think about was, where am I going to go to college? You know,
yeah.
Instead of what is afoot here. But yeah, I think there was a notion that, yeah, this is going to go. And I remember being out in San Diego. James had asked me and my mother to go to lunch there in Balboa Park. And he said, the show's going to Broadway and we'd like you to come too.
Wow.
And I'll never forget that.
Amazing. So just backing up a little, so you rehearsed that production in New York, though, in the Village, I think, at West mm-hmm. Beth?
West Beth Theater, yep, theater complex, sure did.
And what do you remember about that process?
It was interesting. It was a lot of folks really trying to figure out what the heck we were doing, like what the show was, right? I mean, as you know, I don't need to explain to you what the context of the show is, but you know that's an unusual thing to do a live action like that, and I think that there was a lot of excitement in the room and a lot of anxious anticipation in the room. Everybody wanting to get it right, I think, and do their very best. And but it was, you know, it was a weird time because I was a kid in high school from Indiana,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of pulled up and plopped down in New York City. And and you know, I was a very lucky guy. I mean, I being on Broadway, having a professional theater career was not necessarily something that I aspired to do. It sort of happened to me. I always like to say, you know, if my parents had put a football in my hand, maybe I would have been playing professional football. You know, I mean, I from age seven, I mean, I did theater shows and I sang in a men and boys choir three times a week from age 9 to 14. And when you're singing sacred music like that, you really learn how to sing.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, there's harmonies just come naturally. I can sing any part, hear anything, not because I read music really well, but just because when I see that black marking on the page, I know what note to sing. And and wherever it is on there, with sharps or flats or whatever, I know what to sing. But I couldn't sit down and play the piano. No way.
Right.
Anyway, you didn't ask me that, but.
Well, that's interesting. That's very interesting. People have said similar things about classical music in regards to Sondheim, that training was so valuable in singing this rich music that he wrote for this show. Mm-hmm. Would you say, so what grade were you in when you were rehearsing that San Diego production?
Right. So I think that was my senior year of high school, if memory serves, because I graduated high school in May of 87.
Mm.
The show, I literally graduated, spent a few months at home and moved to New York City, and we opened in November of 87.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was your college.
Yeah, right. And I went to NYU as best I could, doing 8 shows a week.
Right from the beginning. Wow.
Right out of the gate. Yeah. I was not about not to go to college. That's just something that I wanted to do. And I was in their the Gallatin division, which you might be familiar with. It's kind of for folks who are working, studying philosophy, because that's what I wanted to do. In any event, what was your question?
San Diego, everyone, there's a lot of, pressure figuring out exactly what this show is, which it's hard for us to maybe nowadays quite appreciate that, because the show seems so confident in itself and that tone. But I understand that was still something that was coming together, even if maybe... James and Steven had more clear ideas in their head, that there were things being experimented with and a lot of material coming in and going out. And I think even maybe you had a different version of Giants in the Sky at that point.
I think I did. And the part that I remember that I didn't have and then had was the very end.
Mm.
Right. There are big, tall, terrible, awesome, scary, wonderful giants in the sky. That wasn't there originally. I don't think. I think I'm right about that. Somebody needs to fact check me on that. But that was not there. And I think Steve or James or together, they thought it needed that sort of button. And I remember a funny thing. James said, after we sort of laid that down and nailed that, and that's, in fact, what they wanted, I had to dig down deep to hit that note. You know, my voice just didn't necessarily want to go up there and hit that the way I've heard some people hit it since then. But in any event, he said, you know, can you do like a backflip? I said, no, I can't do a backflip, you know? And it was just funny to me. It, he's probably thinking, well, he's an actor, right? He's an actor. He probably juggles too, you know, I don't know. But I was like, hey, you know, I'm a guy from Indiana who evidently can sing fairly well. acting is up to the viewer. Certainly not a dancer, never claimed to be one, but in any event, I'll never forget that. Can you do a backflip? And sorry, but no.
That's so funny to hear you say that about the high note, because I think for fans of the show, it's just a really iconic vocal powerhouse moment from you that everyone remembers so well, you know, is one of the highlights of the show.
Well, it's very kind. You know, I would say to you that, you know, we had done that show almost, well, not 2 years at the time of the taping, but I'd done it hundreds of times, right? So I had a lot of time to get my voice to the point where I could just do that note.
Mm.
But in the early going, it was like, you want me to do what? <You know? laughs> But I will tell you, interestingly, about back to the sacred music just for 1 second, I'll tell you one of the things that I think helped me a lot is breath control. You know, that song is, you've got to be able to breathe, I think, properly to sing that song properly. And I just remember being a boy chorister and, you know, learning how to sing and sustain these phrases and conserve your breath and give it the power and the push and the pull that it needs. And I think that was very helpful for me, at least.
In those, I think you said 25 shows that you had done back in Indiana before Into the Woods, before mm-hmm. Paradise, were there any Sondheim shows in that mix?
Great question. My instinct is no, not one. And, you know, I'm one of those people who is very reluctant to get into any kind of trivia with musical theater because I always lose. Because I just don't know my musical thing. I know it fairly well, but not like a lot of people know.
Right.
Not like probably you're probably a encyclopedia about it, but
I'm certainly an Into the Woods encyclopedia.
Yeah, right. But no, I don't think so. You know, I did just a lot of community theater shows and some tours, and you know, even things like A Mall and the Night Visitors. You know, Giancarlo Minotti's. I did that.
Wow.
Three different iterations of that at Indiana University, you know, at the Mack Center down there, and toured with that troupe and stuff like that. But one of the most interesting shows I did was it was called it was before Big River came out. It was called Huck and Jim.
Oh, wow.
And it was written by, well, it was directed by Josh Logan. Remember Josh?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah,
back when he was getting up there. He was, but he was friends.
I mean, he directed the original South Pacific, I think, in like 1942 or something. I mean, that's
I think 45. You're right.
Yeah.
So he wrote this show, or at least directed it. And a friend of my mom's really, this guy, Bruce Pomahack. I don't know if you know Bruce Pomahack, but
no.
He was sort of the archivist for the Rodgers and Hammerstein Library.
Mm.
Good friends with Ted Chapin and that.
Yeah.
And in any event, I think he did the music for it, at least the musical direction, maybe wrote some of the music for it, but that was an interesting show. But it turned out that, and they did that in Indianapolis at Civic Theater there. And I think Fade In, Fade Out, Big River is the one that made it to Broadway, not that one. But ironically, Bruce is the one who I ended up living with when I did the whole run of Into the Woods, lived
wow.
there in the Actors Building at 10th and 43rd.
I'm surprised that you actually didn't do Big River, because it seems like you were the right age and type and, you know, certainly had the chops for it at that exact time. I mean, how was it that you wound up doing Paradise in New York? Was that your first New York show?
It was. So it again goes back to Ira. You know, what happened was Nancy Carson, who's a, I don't know, if I've been out of touch with her for many decades, but she was like a young person's agent, right? Nancy
yeah.
Carson Adler Agency, I think it was mm-hmm. called. Anyway, she came to Indianapolis scouting for talent.
Mm.
And I, you know, I think paid $50 or something. And I sang up, you know, 8 bars of something and did a little commercial and, you know, all these little things. And literally like 10 days later, she calls and says, you know, Playwrights Horizons is looking for a 16-year-old redhead that can sing. And I was 15. I had red hair. You wouldn't know it now, but I had red hair, and evidently I could sing. So we flew up. I'm very competitive. I love to compete no matter what. And I went up and auditioned, and darned if I didn't get the part.
And so, but that, did you, when you were doing Paradise, were you hanging out in town long enough to see shows, to see Big River and think, oh, I could do that, or I could be in, you know, I'm trying to think of what the other shows of that era that had young people's roles were.
Yeah, if memory serves, I auditioned for Big River. I remember auditioning for that. And I can't remember who I auditioned for. I think I went to somebody's house even with my mom and auditioned. And I loved the music. And I remember seeing that show and watching that show and just, who was it? Ron Richardson played Jim.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's voice, the timbre in his voice, the richness of his voice was just staggering to me.
Yeah.
I could listen to it 24/7. So yeah, I mean, you know, there were some thoughts of being in some things and seeing some things, but you know, I tell you, Ben, part of me wishes I could do it all over again because I didn't know then what I know now.
Mm.
You know, I was too young. I think, I think it happened to me very quickly. I didn't have to work myself up through the ranks, unless you consider doing shows from age 7 every day of your life, not putting in your time. But you know what I mean.
Different kinds of ranks, yeah.
Right. I didn't have to go to New York and live. And,
yeah.
I didn't have to do cattle calls and casting. And I just like went up for my first audition ever and got it.
Yeah. Right?
And then the first movie I ever auditioned for was an Oliver Stone film called Born on the 4th of July.
Oh, sure, yeah.
First like major film I've ever auditioned for, got it, right? NBC movie of the week, you know, when I moved out to California, first thing I auditioned for in LA, got the role, right? I mean, it just all such good fortune that I knew it was good fortune, but I didn't, it didn't land in my soul like it does now.
Yes. I like hearing you say good fortune. I think Jack says that phrase.
Right.
Was all of that after NYU going to LA and doing Born on the 4th of July? And
it was. Yeah. Yeah. I spent about a year and a half at NYU and just, it was just kind of too hard.
Yeah.
A week and trying to do the studying that I wanted to do. And and when the show closed.
You left NYU before you left Into the Woods.
Correct.
And did you stay with Into the Woods the entire run?
Except for about 6 weeks. And my understudy, Jeff Blumenkrantz,
yes,
did the role. And I heard he was terrific. I never got to see him do it. But yes, I was in the Philippines shooting Born on the 4th of July.
How cool. Yeah.
Weeks. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, certainly, I mean, at least people my age, that was a major movie. We all remember that with Tom Cruise and Gary Sinise. Gosh. And powerful.
Yeah.
I've got to go back and find you in that movie now.
Well, good luck. It's like, Where's Waldo? So, you know, if you find me, let me know. I want to see it.
So you do Into the Woods. You have lunch in Balboa Park with James Lapine. He says, we want you to go to Broadway. How exciting. Did he at that point know there was going to be this workshop the following summer?
I don't recall if I knew that ahead of time or not. I kind of think it came out fairly quickly that in fact was going to be the deal.
Yeah.
A workshop. Well, and then if all that all goes well, then we'll.
And that even the workshop was, you know, I guess 7 months or 6 months or so after you closed in San Diego. Did you go home to Indiana or was there any time in New York in between?
No, I went home to Indiana. I graduated high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, and got prepared to move to New York.
I mean, that's pretty cool to be at your high school graduation. Everybody else is like going to college or getting a job or don't know what they're doing. And you're going to open on Broadway.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular, quite frankly. Yeah, it really, really was. I was very proud to be a part of that production.
And your mother must have been so proud. And NYU, you weren't even doing it one at a time.
All right.
You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that. But I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert or desserts or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup except for like my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor Meals too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
Great. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But so now let me ask you, because I'm so curious about that summer workshop. And luckily, you know, people like you and Danielle, who were young at the time, I think have clearer memories than some of the people who, you know, so much time has gone by. And also because you were young, I think the experiences were imprinted in a different way because everything was, you know, like a first for you. So sure. What can you tell me about that workshop?
Yeah. Well, I remember a couple of things fairly vividly. I think we did that workshop at 890 Broadway, if memory serves. And I just loved that building, right? Mm. I mean, I just remember like just interesting little things that would happen, like you know, the manned elevator opening and stepping in and looking to my left, and there's Mikhail Baryshnikov going up, you know, to his rehearsal, whatever he was doing, you know, and just wonderful, neat little things like that that would happen. Mm-hmm. But I remember that being a wonderful time. I remember Betty Buckley was the witch.
Mm.
If I'm right about my timing,
yeah,
she was the witch. And the way I remember the story, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus here, but I remember she brought her dog to rehearsal. And the story that I heard, and I may be wrong about this, but this is how I vividly remember it. We took a break and Betty asked James to walk her dog.
Oh.
Ben, the next thing I know, James comes back upstairs and Betty Buckley doesn't.
And wow.
She's being replaced. Now, I may have totally made that up, but that is how that is how I remember it. That it was just sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. You know. That may be all wet on that, but that is how Ben Wright remembers.
That's hilarious. I mean, I've heard a lot of different stories. I'm trying very hard to talk to Betty herself and get her version of it. But that's interesting. I mean, so as you recall, she did not complete the workshop.
That's what I recall. Yeah, she didn't complete it. Like all of a sudden, she was out, and I feel like. Yeah, I may be wrong about that because I remember I was at Kings Island just riding rides before the workshop started. Now, wait a minute. And I remember getting a call from my agent saying that Bernadette Peters was going to take that role. So that doesn't make sense what I'm saying. So I mean, my youthful memory, Ben.
I know the workshop was very, very close to Broadway. Like, mm-hmm. I think the workshop was June or July, possibly even into August.
Yeah.
And you had maybe like a month off before you started Broadway rehearsals.
Yeah.
And then some people have talked about a reading at a townhouse before Broadway rehearsals started, which was with the Broadway cast, including Bernadette, and that was the first time most people became aware that Bernadette was now playing the witch, or even that Betty was not.
Yeah.
But I've generally heard that Betty had completed, I guess there was two or three invited presentations of the workshop, and that Betty had gotten to the end of those.
Yeah, she may have. I just remember that. I can see it. I can see it happening in the studio up there. But maybe.
Well,
maybe.
I've definitely heard other people talk about her dog.
have you really?
You're not hallucinating a pet where there was none.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I have no beef with Betty. You know, first of all,
yes.
Dogs need to be walked.
You just got to make sure
you ask the right person to walk your dog. Yeah. A and B, you know, man, could that woman can sing. She's singing the songs for the, oh my gosh. I mean, breathtaking the way that her vocal cords, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I find most intriguing about the stories about Betty is just what my, I mean, as fabulous, of course, as Bernadette was, I mean, such an iconic performance that she gave. No doubt. When I just would give anything to have heard Betty singing any of those songs. You know, I guess Betty didn't have Last Midnight. She had Boom Crunch in place of that. But I believe she did have the ballad Stay With Me, which is, you know, just so beautiful.
That's the one that I remember her singing that was just, it was just electrifying. And just absolutely, the power in her voice when she sang that particular song was jaw-dropping, to me at least. And of course, Bernadette too, that brought her, her unique that only Bernadette can do, but oh my gosh. Yeah.
Do you remember anything else about Betty's performance? I'm so curious how it would have been different in terms of the acting or any other aspect.
Yeah. You know, I don't remember much about it. I was sort of in my own little 17-year-old world, I just remember her seeming very professional, very down to business, very no nonsense. I don't remember a lot of chit chat. You know, I think she was friendly enough to me and everybody else, but it was just that voice is what I remember, you know, because we were in different things. I remember Bernadette used to wear like a cape with like, I think she had like a piece of elastic that kind of bent her over a little bit that was connected to her leg or to her ankle to kind of get that hunch that she was trying to develop for the role. And at least that's, again, that's what I remember. But
was there anything about your physicality or movement that you remember being working with either independently or that you were directed to do sort of, you know, to create this Jack character?
Yeah. The quick answer is no, I don't remember anybody, you know, James or anyone else or Lars saying, hey, let's do that. I kind of felt like they just sort of left me alone. You know, they just kind of let me bring what I brought to it, whatever it was. And, you know, I never tried to play Jack like a dope.
Yeah.
You know, I never, you know, like a, like he was a dim-witted in any way. I just tried to play him sincerely. And try not to goof him up too much. Right. I don't know. That didn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
He seemed to just be kind of a sheltered kid that, that wanted to be a man and get out into the world and, you know, and earn his stripes. Right. And he wasn't permitted to do it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of him being sheltered, of course you were working with the late, great Barbara Brynn as your mother, and the two of you seem to have a great dynamic watching on the video. What do you remember about working with her?
Just the sweetest, nicest, kindest, most professional actress that I've ever met. Just consummate professional. Always on time. Just checks all the boxes, right?
Yeah.
And I always thought it was funny that we were sort of funny, but just it was an interesting casting choice that I was my age and she was her age and she was my mother. And just I loved that sort of layer to it, that sort of questioning of, you know, of the relationship there. But Barbara was just.
You mean that she was presumably too old to actually be your mother?
Right.
Yeah. She was like a grandmother's age and you were still, you know, basically a kid.
Right. Right. And she was such a lovely diminutive person. You're right. In stature. Right. I don't know how tall she was, but I bet she was 4'11", something like that.
Yeah.
She was a very, very diminutive person. And here I am, you know, like 6 feet, just felt like I was towering over her. And there was some visual comedy in that, I think.
That's funny that you're 6 feet tall. You know, in the video, I think partly they did such a good job. Anhold Ward's costuming of Jack is so like boyish. I mean, it's almost like a Pinocchio or something. Like, right. I wouldn't have guessed you were as tall as 6 feet. That's so interesting.
That's funny you say that, because most people when they talk to me about that role and they say, "Oh my gosh, I thought you were really tall. I thought you were like 6'4". And when I say I'm 6 feet, that's if I really stand up straight.
Well,
and
you've got a lot on me, so I'm impressed. What about with the rest of the cast? I mean, a lot of them were Broadway veterans, and this was also new for you. What do you remember learning from them, or just learning in this new experience you had?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. It was such a, looking back, it was such a such a remarkable group of people who certainly started the show, but then even when people left and you know, other people filled in the roles, excellent group of folks too. But you know, I think what I learned, Ben, is that if you get the right combination of luck and timing and skill and talent, all those things happen for you, because there's so many talented people in the world that just the break never happens, I'm afraid. But if, like me, you really, everything comes together and you get lucky and you do a good job, right? You're reliable, you do a good job, you just do the basics, right? I feel like you can be in that Broadway community as long as you want.
Yeah.
Right? Because you know, I remember that when Into the Woods closed, I went out to LA for a little bit. Then I decided to go back to Indiana to go to IU, and I wasn't in classes for 1 week. And guess who called again?
Ira. Who was that? Oh my God.
Ira. And Ira says, "Hey, Steve wants you to come up and audition for John Hinckley Jr. and Assassins."
Oh, wow.
And I said, "Oh my gosh, I just started college, right? I was at NYU. I left. Then I just went to, you know, New York, and then to LA, and then back to college. And I'm a week in college." And he says, "You want to come audition?" I couldn't help myself. I said, "Of course." So I go up, I audition for John Hinckley Jr. there at Playwrights Horizons, and they offered me the part.
Wow.
And I said, "Can I have a week to think about it?" And he said, "Yes, of course." So the first day it was, "I'm dropping out of school. I'm going to go do the show." The next day it was, "I can't do that. I got to stay." So it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And you know, the end of the story, I finally said, "Ira, I can't do it." And I don't regret that, because you can't regret things like that. But yes. B, because if I had done the show, I probably never would have met my wife.
Oh, that's so funny. I assumed because you and your wife were in State Fair together that you had met. I made up a story that you met on State Fair.
No. The funny story about meeting my wife is that she came with her high school. She's 2 years younger than me. She came to her high school with her high school to see Into the Woods back in 88 or 89. And her story is she sat in the back row of the balcony. It was very warm up there, and she fell asleep during the second act. That's the story. So we'd actually sort of been in the same room well before we met, but we didn't meet on that trip. We met when I went to the University of Cincinnati for one quarter, and she was a senior there, and we met there in 1992. But and then did State Fair in 96.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So, okay. So, well, that's lovely though, to have at least been offered another Sondheim show with a different director in that case, Jerry Zaks. And
Yeah. I mean, Victor Garber was in that.
Oh yeah. Quite a cast.
It was just I remember Steve invited me to opening night, and I went up and I saw the show opening night, and it was spectacular. I was just sort of sick about the whole thing.
Yeah.
I didn't do it. But I think Greg, what's his name? Greg German.
Yes, German. Yeah. I'm not sure how you say it. He was, people know him from Ally McBeal.
That's
on TV,
right.
But he was started off in Sondheim's Assassins.
Yeah. And he was terrific. And, you know, so, and I remember going to Steve's place in Turtle Bay for the party afterwards. And John Wideman was there, and they were all just sort of, you know, sort of poking at me a little bit. You know, I remember Steve said, "I guess the part wasn't big enough for you. Is that right?" I said, no, you know, but just what a great show that was. I wish I'd been part of it.
Did you maintain that relationship with Sondheim over the years after that?
I did for a long time. He was, you know, very kind and generous, and we got along quite well. And he was just always very, very kind to me, very, very generous with me. But over time, I sort of, you know, I kind of have spent the last 30 years of my life unwinding myself from the first 20 years of my life.
I think a lot of people can probably relate to that.
Yeah. So, you know, I kind of lost touch with them a little bit, but, you know, we had so many reunions, whether it was Seegers from Center or
right.
BAM or the 10-year anniversary that I think.
Yes, on Broadway.
Yeah. Where was that? The Palace Theater? I can't remember. I think it was.
Anywhere.
But yeah, we'd stay in touch and talk and chat. And, you know, I always liked him.
And going back again in the Broadway run, when cast members came back for you to film a few performances for the American Playhouse broadcast, do you remember anything from that struck you as interesting at the time? I mean, I guess, would that have been before you were out for 6 weeks to film Born on the 4th of July?
Yeah, I can't remember if that was filmed before I did Born on the 4th or after. I want to say it was after, Ben, because I remember, but I'm just guessing. I remember having a conversation with James that he told me, when I got back from the Philippines, he said, you know, the show's going to be closing in the fall. Do you want to come back and finish it out?
Mm.
And I said, yeah, I would like to do that. But I don't remember if we did that before or after.
I mean, do you remember thinking about that filming as someone who was a young film and television actor? You know, do you remember having a different approach to that, knowing to play to the cameras and that you were creating this filmed record of Into the Woods?
Yeah, you know, I think my notion with that at the time was this is going to be filmed and it's going to live in the Lincoln Center archives. Mm. And
yeah.
You have to go sit down and watch it if you want to. And that's the extent of it.
Yeah.
And we all know the rest of the story. It's just become this asset that people watch and, you know, is the threshold musical for a lot of people. I've had people come up to, you know, we get these touring groups through Wilmington where I live and these young people show up and they say, you're why I'm in the theater.
That's
humbling. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, should I say thank you? Are you happy in the theater? Or but you know, I had no idea that the show was going to take on the life that it has. No one did. No one could possibly have known that. But no, I just tried to do an authentic performance. I knew where the cameras were. I saw where they were. I did my best to figure out what kind of sight lines I was going to use. But I remember Chip Zion saying something that I took as a compliment. Maybe it wasn't a compliment, but he said, you know, Joanna and I were watching your performance on the playback of Giants in the Sky on that recording. And he said something like the clarity in your eyes, you it's like you never blinked, right? There was a focus there that was just, and maybe he was saying, hey, blink once in a while, pal. You know, you look like a robot up there. But I think he was saying that he liked that. And
yes,
and, you know, I never took acting lessons. I operate 101% off of instinct. That's how I've always done it. Which doesn't make it good. It just makes it how I do it.
Well, it certainly was good. I mean, I think you're spot on. I firmly believe that that video so ideally produced is really, I mean, not just a, as you said, a threshold for people in theater, but just for fans everywhere. It's really their gateway, certainly to Stephen Sondheim. And I think in many cases to musicals and to theater in general. You know, and I think that legacy continues to grow. And I think when we see these, subsequent productions and even the Disney film of Into the Woods, they owe such a debt to that existing. Have you been involved in any other incarnations of Into the Woods since then?
No, I haven't. Unless I'm forgetting something. I remember that. I've seen a few productions, but very few.
Yeah.
Very few productions. Mostly like Into the Woods Junior productions, right? But no, I don't believe that I have outside of the reunions that were done.
Yeah, well, those are well, listen, it's not too late. There's still quite a few parts in Into the Woods you could do.
Hey, I'll tell you what, my favorite song in the whole show is In No More.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, the father and the son singing that song. I mean, I would love to do that. Just to sing that song.
Mm.
What a great,
absolutely.
Movie. Yeah. Yeah. You never know. I've been out of show business for a long time, but I might come back for the right thing. Who knows?
Yes. Yes. Have you done other Sondheim shows, in elsewhere ever since Into the Woods?
No, I really haven't. You know, after Into the Woods, the next show I did really was State Fair.
Yeah.
And that's where Amy did that with me. But then, you know, I was offered the role of the brother in Scarlet Pimpernel. Do you remember that show?
Sure.
I think it was Carol Lee Carmelo and I, and she played the sister. I can't remember the roles and all that stuff.
But, yeah.
But I was married and at that point had just moved and bought a new house in North Carolina. And I was like, now they wanted me to come up and do that. And I once again, I said, I just can't do it.
That was an easier one to turn down than Assassins, I bet.
Right, indeed.
Speaking indeed. Of someone who saw both shows.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. And what did come next for you after you left show business, as you say? What?
Yeah. So, you know, I remember being, let's see, after State Fair, I got this show called Hot Mikado that was done at the Ford's Theater. In DC. And it was actually, I think it got picked up by the Nederlanders to go to Broadway, but it ended up not going, but it didn't matter to me because I was just like, I'm just don't want to do theater anymore. That's just where I was in my life. And I was going to move and down to North Carolina with Amy and where her family lived. And her dad very graciously offered me a job in his manufacturing company. You know, I never would have gotten that job because I didn't know the first thing about it, but just learned on the job type thing. But that's what I did. I just went and sort of tried to have the kind of life that I thought I wanted to have, which is sort of not the gypsy life, right? Not the, the going here, there, or yonder. Cause I really had sort of done that since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think I wanted that for my life.
Yeah.
So I didn't choose it. I just voluntarily extracted myself from it. And the story that I tell, Ben, is, you know, I encountered so many people like myself, you know, who wanted it so badly, right? I mean, just would give their right leg for it, right? And here I was getting so lucky on some things, and it made me feel badly. You know, I was like, I need to get out of the way. These guys are talented. They're hungry. They want it. And I've just got things falling in my lap here. And what a schmuck am I to do that, you know? So I just extracted myself from it. And again, no regrets, right? I've had an incredible last 30 years. And so life was, you know, I worked for him for a while. And then I got into retail brokerage because, you know, I started investing money when I was a kid, you know, because I was making money as an actor.
Smart. God,
you know, and I just never lost my interest in it. It was one of the few things that was like, you know, what are you really interested in? Investing, oddly enough, was one of those things. So I built up this book of business over 20 years and ended up selling it a few years ago to another group out of Raleigh, North Carolina, and joined my wife full time in this coffee shop enterprise that we have.
Oh, how cool. And now you're together again in that. That's awesome.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, everyone listening, if you're in Raleigh, we should go. What's the name of the coffee shop?
Yeah, so actually, we're headquartered in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is right on the coast. It's called Bitty, B-I-T-T-Y, Bitty and Bose, like Beauregard, Bitty and Bose Coffee. And those are the nicknames. You've never heard of this coffee shop, have you?
No. Uh-uh.
Okay, so Bitty and Bo are our two youngest kids, and all four of our kids are biological to me and Amy, so we did not adopt anyone. But both Bo and Biddy were born to us with Down syndrome,
which
so statistically rare that there are no statistics on it. And then our oldest daughter, who's almost 25, is on the autism spectrum. And then our 23-year-old, who actually graduated NYU Film and TV, is our only typically developing child. But the long story short is we have about 18 coffee shops spread out over 12 different.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is not a coffee shop.
Right, right.
So, well, this is more convenient. People can go to Biddy and Bo's.
Places. Yeah. Close. If you're in New York, closest one's probably DC. We're going to be up in Cambridge, in Boston pretty soon. But in any event,
great.
But the whole deal with it is, and I know that's not what this is about, but 80% of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities don't have jobs because they can't get jobs because it doesn't occur to the business community that they could be employable, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of out to dispel that what we call a myth. And so we have over 400 employees with intellectual and developmental disabilities who work in our coffee shops.
How wonderful. I mean, wow, yeah. this is not just good coffee. This is a good cause as well. I mean, well, listen, it's related too. I mean, this goes back to no one is alone and children will listen. And a lot of the themes that we're looking at, it sounds like it is stuff that has been a part of your life's work in various ways.
It's absolutely true. And yeah, who knew that the proverbial bean was going to be such a theme in my life.
The bean, right? Yes. Thank you. Oh, I love that, Ben. Thank you so much for sharing all that with me. It's really wonderful to chat with you.
Oh, absolutely.
And we will continue to hope that we'll see the next Ben Wright performance of Sondheim or something else.
Hey, you never know. You never know. And Ben, thank you for doing this. I mean, this is just selfishly, just for my kids are so excited to be turned on to your podcast and to hear the stories that from other people besides me, right, who can really fill in a lot of gaps and put a lot of color on some things. So thank you for being the documentarian of this. It's really it's a gift to everybody. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. I appreciate you saying that. Listen, there's so many of us that are such fans of the work that you all did that we just want to know everything. Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, how Sondheim and Lapine went into the woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 38 with Douglas Sills, Rapunzel's Prince on the national tour.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.